You're listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. I'm recording on Saturday, June 17th. This is episode 105. Summer is officially here. I now have two high schoolers. I can't believe it. My eighth grader graduated last week, and we're just so proud of him. I made a list of all the books that I want to read over summer break, and on my Books Are My People hiatus, I've whittled it down to, you know, just a scant 30 books. I know it's ridiculous, but it's good to have lofty goals. Depending on when you are hearing this podcast, I'm going live with Annie Sullivan over on Instagram at Jennifer Calieris at 9 a.m. Pacific time to recommend some books. So check it out. We will record it and post it on our Instagram pages if you miss it, and I will send out a link to a Google document with all the recommended titles we talk about in my Books Are My People weekly newsletter tomorrow morning to all of my subscribers. And if you are not a subscriber and would like to be, just go to jennifercalieris.com or booksaremypeople.com and sign up. A friendly reminder that this will be the last episode until mid or late August, as I'm taking a little break to recoup and read. The first significant break I've taken in almost 4 years. Please stay subscribed to the show so you are notified when I'm back. And now it's time for some bookish news. According to the Library of Congress, U.S. Poet Laureate Ada Limone reveals her poem that is going to fly on NASA's Europa Clipper. The Europa Clipper will be on a year-long journey to explore Jupiter's icy moon, Europa. And the poem will be engraved on the spacecraft, which is set to launch in October 2024. You too can add your name to fly with a poem to Europa. As long as your name is received before midnight, December 31st, it will be stenciled onto a microchip and go along for the ride. I will leave a link in the show notes so you can add your name to a poem and be up in space. There is an open call for the casting of the memoir Crying in H Mart. It was on Twitter, and the casting call for the film's lead asks for an 18 to 25-year-old Korean-American who would play the role of Michelle. If you want to respond to the casting call, you can send a creative video introduction to a link that I will leave in the show notes if there are any budding actors out there. And the much-anticipated Lessons in Chemistry Apple TV series gets a premiere date. This series is based on the Bonnie Garmus novel, and it stars Brie Larson, and it will premiere on Friday, October 13th. I think they're dropping two episodes then, and then new episodes will debut weekly. I love this book. I thought it was so funny and wonderful. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it, and I can't wait to see how the TV interpretation turns out. We have a special author book recommendation today from Daisy Florin, author of My Last Innocent Year, which I recommended on the previous episode of Books Are My People, episode 104. My Last Innocent Year is a coming-of-age story set against the backdrop of the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal, and it's a timely and wise portrait of a young woman learning to trust her voice and move toward independence while recognizing the beauty and grit of where she came from. It's a campus novel that covers power structures, religion, identity, and writing. And as I said in the last episode, I highly recommend it. I am so excited to recommend Avery Carpenter Fori's debut novel, Social Engagement, about a marriage that falls apart on its wedding night. As new bride Callie Holt tries to figure out what exactly has gone wrong, she turns to her phone for answers. This charming and acerbic novel moves backward in time, each chapter framed with Instagram posts as Callie tries to piece together the clues of this disaster hiding in plain sight. Social Engagement is a brilliant send-up of millennial wedding culture and the social media that feeds it. Come for the glamorous destination weddings, stay for the probing analysis of wealth, class, body image, and the question of who gets to make art.
Social Engagement is the beach read all the girls with MFAs will be reading this summer. Don't miss it.
And again, that was my last Innocent Year author Daisy Alpert Florin recommending the novel Social Engagement by Avery Carpenter Forey. You can link to purchase either of these books in the show notes. Before we get to today's guest, I wanted to announce that I am doing a final summer book giveaway for May Cobb's A Likeable Woman. May Cobb was the guest author on episode 104, and we talked all about her novel, A Likeable Woman, which is a super fun page-turning suspense novel, perfect for summer. To enter to win, please follow me on Instagram at Jennifer Calogaris. Sign up for my Books Are My People newsletter. There's a link in bio on Instagram, or you can go to booksaremypeople.com and leave a comment on my A Likeable Woman giveaway post. That's it. This giveaway will close on Wednesday, July 5th, and I will contact a winner on Thursday, July 6th. This giveaway is open to U.S. mailing addresses only. Nicola Harrison is the author of three historical fiction novels, Montauk, The Showgirl, and Hotel Laguna. Born and raised in England, she moved with her family to Southern California when she was 14. She's a graduate of UCLA and received her MFA from Stony Brook University. Prior to writing novels, she worked as a fashion journalist in New York City, where she lived for 17 years. Now she resides in Manhattan Beach, California, with her husband, two sons, and her 15-year-old Chihuahua, Lola. Hello, Nicola.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. We were just talking about our weather right now is not the kind of weather you want to run outside and hang out in. It's so gloomy.
I know. It is gloomy. For Southern California, it's just wrong.
And it's been that way for months.
Yeah.
So now we know what it's like to live in Seattle.
I know. I'm waiting for this sunshine to kick in. It'll happen.
It'll happen. So I loved your novel so much. I was so swept up in it. I finished it in 2 days and I just couldn't get enough. And before we get to talking about Hotel Laguna and how much I loved it, I wanted to ask, what was your path to becoming a writer?
Okay. Well, thanks so much. That's so nice to hear. I think I always knew that I wanted to be a writer. I grew up in England and I actually had an author, a children's book author. Her name was Margaret Reeves, who lived down the street from me when I was a kid. And I stayed in touch with her even after I moved away, and I would send her letters, and sometimes embarrassingly, I would send her like short stories and poems and ask her if she thought I should send them out to get published. And she would always write back and say very nice things about them and say, you know, don't send them out just yet. Keep working on your craft. You'll get there. And I think sort of knowing an author, a real life author from a young age, gave me a little bit of courage. And it kind of made me believe that it's actually a career that you could have, and you could actually, somebody could actually write books and make a living doing it. So that was sort of like my early glimpse of being a writer. And then throughout college, I always gravitated towards English and creative writing. Those were my majors, and or my major and my minor. And, or maybe it was just to avoid doing, you know, math and science. Those are always what I was gravitating towards. And then after college, I moved to New York and got into fashion journalism. And I was the style writer for Forbes for a while. But even then, even though I was writing for a living during the day, at night or on the weekends, I would always be taking a creative writing class on the side. And then that eventually turned into my first book, Montauk, which I published in 2019.
I love that idea of having not necessarily a writing mentor, but someone close by whose job it is to write. So you can see them thriving in their career, even if they're not hands-on helping you. I think it makes a big difference. In your own words, tell us about Hotel Laguna.
Yeah, so Hotel Laguna is set in 1946, and it tells the story of a young woman, Hazel Francis, who has left her home in Kansas to move to Los Angeles, California, to work in an airplane factory, Douglas Aircraft, as a Rosie the Riveter during World War II. And she loves the work and the sense of purpose that it gives her, But then when the war is over and the men come home and take, you know, take their jobs back, the women are thanked and told to go back to being mothers and housewives. And Hazel doesn't have a family to go back to, or really a home to go back to. So she feels very lost. And she ends up in the bohemian town of Laguna Beach in California, and rather desperately takes a job working with Tamsin Radcliffe, who's a famous and cantankerous old artist who has a scandal. He's sort of haunted by a scandal from his past. So she gets deeply involved in the art world down in Laguna Beach, and she becomes determined to uncover this mystery behind her boss's past. And she strikes up a friendship with a very handsome bartender at Hotel Laguna, who she absolutely cannot get involved with for various reasons. But ultimately, it's a story of love and friendship and perseverance, and how one small decision can really change the course of your life in many unexpected ways.
And how did you land on this idea?
Well, it was the spring of 2020. We all know what that was like. And I was sitting in a house in New Jersey. We lived in New York City, but our friend had said we could stay at their house because they weren't using it during COVID. And I was thinking at the time, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to write again. I had a one-year-old who was just starting to walk, and a 10-year-old who was trying to do, you know, homeschool. And everything just felt very uncertain and out of control. And, you know, I couldn't do any research, well, any travel to do research. So I was like, and I was thinking about what I wanted to write next for my next book. And I settled on the idea of Laguna Beach, or the place of Laguna Beach, because I thought everything feels up in the air, but where do I want my imagination to, where do I want to live in my imagination for the next, you know, year and a half or 2 years or however long it takes me to write this book? And I settled on Laguna Beach because it's a place that I love, and I have a lot of fond memories of Laguna. I lived there right after college. It was the first place I lived where I didn't have any roommates. I had my first, you know, job with a salary, and it was sort of my first taste of living independently. And also, it's an artist's town. It's an artist community, and both of my parents are artists, and they've both exhibited at galleries and at the art festivals in Laguna Beach. And so I had this sort of insight and some scoop about the art world in Laguna Beach, and I wanted to bring it all together. So I started researching Laguna and some, you know, what was going on historically at various different times. And I settled on writing about post-World War II, the 1940s, the late 1940s. And I started reading about women working on the home front during the war, and how some of them didn't want to go back to their old lives after having this taste of working jobs that were traditionally reserved for men. And so I was reading up on it, and I mentioned it to my husband, and he's like, oh yeah, I think my grandma did that. She was a Rosie the Riveter. Oh. I'm like, what? How can you not tell me this? I write historical fiction. This is important information. And so then I got to interview my husband's mom. His grandmother is no longer around, but I got to interview my mother-in-law, and she remembered a lot of stories about her. And so it kind of took off from there.
Well, Hazel is such a fantastic character. She's a feminist, she's brave, she's defying the status quo, and I just loved following her on her journey. And I feel like I learned so much in the novel about Laguna, which really is not far from Los Angeles, and I should know more about it, and also about the Pageant of the Masters and about the aerospace industry, which was particularly interesting because my husband works in the aerospace industry. And as I was reading, I'd get all excited about learning about some of the history, and I'd start telling him a fact that I read in the novel, and he'd finish my sentence because, of course, he knew that history because that's his whole world. Yes. But I did not. So I learned so much reading it.
Oh, that's so great. Laguna Beach is just about an hour south of Los Angeles, and it's a beautiful little town.
And I've been there, and I didn't realize it was so focused on the arts.
Oh, yes.
The showgirl explores the Ziegfeld Follies, New York in the 1920s, and Montauk were transported to Long Island in the 30s, and of course, Hotel Laguna takes place in Southern California in the 40s. What is it about historical fiction that appeals to you as a writer?
You know, it's funny because it's not like I was ever a real history buff in school, but I do have this fascination with finding out juicy details about places that I love, and then like recreating that world in my mind and creating characters who could have lived in those worlds. And I think I love the combination of having the freedom of writing fiction and, you know, making up stories, but then also being grounded by what happened historically in those places, or at least having the boundaries of what was and wasn't possible during those time periods. So it's just a good combination that works well for me. And I also really love delving into women's history, and I'm fascinated with how women's roles have changed throughout various decades. And, you know, I like sort of holding up a mirror to where we are now versus where we were in the time period that I'm writing about, and seeing how far we've come, and also at times realizing how far we still have to go.
What are you working on next?
So I think I'm working my way through the decades unintentionally, because I started writing not in order, because Montauk was set in the 1930s, The Showgirl was set in the 1920s, Hotel Laguna set in the 1940s, and now I'm working on a book that's set in the 1950s. So this one is set on Balboa Island, and which is actually only about 15 minutes away from Laguna Beach, but it's got a whole different feel to it, but it's still in Southern California. And it's about the unlikely friendship that forms between three women: a young mother of two who's having a difficult time in her marriage, a Balboa local who's kind of like a socialite and everybody knows her in town and loves her, and then a disgraced former tennis champion who's kind of hiding out on Balboa Island, living as a recluse. And I wanted to write about this tight-knit community that has strangers living among them, each with their own secrets. And I'm working on it right now. I'm still not quite sure how it's going to end, but that's where I'm at.
Sounds great. I will definitely be picking it up because I love the Hotel Laguna, and I feel like I learned so much about the history of an area I knew little about. We are going to move on to the book. So, Nicola, what is your first pick?
Ooh, I love The Shoulder Season by Christina Clancy. It's a coming-of-age story set in 1981 about 19-year-old Sherry Taylor. She's a Playboy bunny at a Playboy resort in East Troy, Wisconsin. And I bet you didn't know there was a Playboy resort there.
I did not.
I loved it because it's a powerful and complicated story about women's empowerment and men's greed. And it's full of friendship and heartache and hope. And there's a romance that I was really rooting for in it. And that's The Shoulder Season by Christina Clancy.
My first pick is The Crane Husband by Kelly Barnhill. She wrote The Girl Who Drank the Moon. You may have read that with your kids or have kids who read that book. Anyhow, The Crane Husband was published in February. It's technically a novella, and this is a beautiful and unsettling book that reads like a surreal fairy tale about a 15-year-old girl living in the Midwest whose father passed away 6 years prior. And on the first page, her mother enters their home accompanied by this enormous crane the size of a man. We learn that her mother is an artist. She weaves tapestries, to be specific, and Barnhill explores the connotation of the weaver in folklore and mythology. Her mother becomes very distracted by this crane, who's now living in their home, so her daughter has to take over all of her mother's chores on the farm. The crane continues to pull her mother's attention, and not only that, but her mother's body has these nicks and bruises from the crane's sharp beak, and the house is continually filling up with feathers. Child Protective Services keep showing up, wondering why the girl and her brother are missing so much school, and through flashbacks, we get a sense of what her father was like and what a loss his death was to that family. Like I said, it's a super short book, so I don't want to spoil anything, but the magic of this book is in the reading experience, and it just made me so happy that books like this exist in the world. There are references to the fable The Crane's Wife in the novella, and I remember reading that one in elementary school, but it wasn't until I saw some people chatting about it online that I considered this to be a very loose retelling of that tale. If you're a fan of Angela Carter's work or work that feels influenced by dreams or fairy tales, then this is the book for you, and that's The Crane Husband by Kelly Barnhill. What's your next pick?
My next pick is The House is on Fire by Rachel Beanland. And I actually blurbed this book. So I read it and I loved it so much. So I wanted to talk about it here. It's about the lives of four unforgettable characters, Black, white, free, and enslaved, whose lives intertwine in unimaginable ways in the aftermath of one of America's deadliest tragedies, which is the Richmond Theater Fire of 1811, which I didn't know anything about until I read this book. Beautifully written, and she really captures everything that is unjust and wrong alongside everything that is good and hopeful. And it's just a beautifully written book, and I highly recommend it. And it's The House is on Fire by Rachel Beanland.
We're going to take a very sharp left turn into my next pick, which is Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone by Benjamin Stevenson. And this came out in January, and I finally nabbed a copy from the library. This I would plug as Clue meets Knives Out. It's about a man named Ernest Cunningham, or Ernie, as he is affectionately known. And he speaks directly to the reader, telling them that everyone in his family has killed someone. And what has him most anxious is the fact that he's headed to his family reunion at a ski resort. His estranged brother, who's been in jail for, you guessed it, killing someone, is slated to be released and will be at this reunion, and Ernie anticipates some bad blood between the two of them and is also fearful that perhaps actual blood will be shed. When some family members discover a dead body on the premises, they wonder who has been killed and why, and of course, which one of their family members is responsible. The tone is dark comedy. It's a fast read. I'm sure this will be a movie. It just felt really fresh, original, and witty. Stevenson, the author, is Australian, and he's a well-known stand-up comedian there. And according to his bio, it sounds like maybe he's a literary agent as well. And again, that's Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone by Benjamin Stevenson. What is your last pick?
My last pick is The Matchmaker's Gift by Linda Loigman. This is another historical fiction book with a dual timeline, the 1920s and present day, and it follows the lives of two women, Sarah and Abby. Both have the unique ability of being able to find a soul's other half. It starts with a scrappy Jewish teenager who has just arrived in New York in the 1920s, and she's struggling to follow her calling as a matchmaker. And then 70 years later, her granddaughter, who is a cynical divorce lawyer, realizes that she has very, very inconveniently inherited the family gift for matchmaking. And I found this funny and moving, and it has a touch of magical realism to it, and which is different from Linda Loigman's previous books. She also wrote The Wartime Sisters and The Two Family House. And she's a wonderful writer, and I really love this book by her. And that's The Matchmaker's Gift by Linda Loigman.
I love a little magical realism sprinkled in. I just think it makes things so much fun. Well, thanks so much for chatting with us. If listeners, if you're in LA, Nicola will be discussing Hotel Laguna with my friend and bestselling author Julie Clark at Zibby's this Friday, June 23rd at 6 p.m. And I will be there, so you should come by and say hi and get this wonderful book signed by the author. Where can people find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram, and it is Nicola Harrison Author. And that's the same with Facebook, which is also Nicola Harrison Author, and Twitter, Nicola H. Author.
And I will link up to all of your social media accounts, as well as all of the books we've discussed today. And just for kicks, what are you reading next?
I'm currently reading Big Gay Wedding by Byron Lane. I just went to an event here in Manhattan Beach through the bookstore Pages, and Byron and his husband, Stephen Rowley, who's also an author, his book, The Celebrants, they both came out on the same day. So I bought both of their books, and I'm starting with Big Gay Wedding, and then I'm going to move on to The Celebrants, and they both sound great.
That is a power couple if I've ever heard of one. I'm reading Faces by Tove Ditlevsen, who's the author of the Copenhagen trilogy, and this is my third novella this month, and I feel like I'm just really getting into novellas right now. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Your book was amazing, and it's also inspired me to go to the Pageant of the Masters, which I've never attended.
Oh, great. Yes, you should go. It's wonderful.
Also, as I mentioned on the last show, I will be purchasing one banned book a month and placing it in a local little free library. So my first purchase has been made. It was Gender Queer, a graphic memoir by Maya Kobabe. And you can scroll till you see my post about it on Instagram and find out where I've placed it and go read it. Remember, everyone, I'm taking a break from podcasting this summer, so you will not hear a new episode until sometime in August. But if you're signed up for my weekly newsletter, you'll continue to get new releases and paperback releases, as well as bookish news, sent to your inbox each Tuesday. You can sign up through the link in the show notes or by visiting booksaremypeople.com. And I hope you all have a fantastically bookish summer.